Welcome to Local Matters. I'm Louis Matheny. I'm in the studio with a renaissance artist, I would say, because her talents are many. Helga Skinner, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I think of you as primarily a photographer because that's the majority of work that I've seen, but you've done work in a lot of different areas. But let's talk about your photography and how you got started. How and when did you get into photography?
Well, I retired, and when I retired, I bought a camera and a duck came along. So it actually was a duck that started the whole process. Mom and I were sitting on the porch and this two ducks came running down the hill. And they just mesmerized me with everything they did. We kept them, took care of them, lost one to an owl. The other one survived for about 3 years. And then a coyote got them at somebody's lake because we put him on a pond. And we would go visit him, and he'd run up, and he'd eat all the food, and he'd eat 150 worms because I got those worms that you buy for fishing.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'd give him that bucket, and he was pecking at the bucket after that, right? But we went religiously every Sunday and took pictures, and he came running with all his women friends.
You know, I know this about you, and people soon learn this about you, especially if they come to see your work at the studio and store in the West Side Historic Shopping District. But there's a great story behind each of those images, and you just launched into this great, simple story that started with, I ask you the question, how did you get into photography? And I think you should get a t-shirt that says this. It started with a duck.
Yes, yes. The photo club that I'm in, they laughed at me for a long time about all the things. In fact, they asked me one day, please don't bring any more caterpillar pictures.
Caterpillar pictures.
Yes. Yeah. And with the duck was the same thing because I did the duck all the time. But I have to do it over and over because I want to perfect. I'm trying to show an emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's hard in photography and on pictures to show an emotion. Music is the one that carries that out more.
Right.
Right? So I set all my things to music and made slideshows.
Ah.
I have tons of slideshows. So I gave one gentleman a book, a slideshow, and that was all dying flowers at the end of the season because they're so beautiful.
Beautiful, yeah.
They drape, they've got veins, the color's richer. As we get older, we get more beautiful, and I wanted to make this point. Well, anyway, it moved him because it was to music, Mozart, and so he wrote the Ode to the Flower, and I made a book out of that.
Ode to the Flower with your photographs of flowers, and the majority of photographers I know would never take a second glance at a wilting or dying flower,
right.
And yet your eye seems to land on things that people just don't land on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
And thank God you're there preserving these images for people that are glancing away from it or not noticing it, which is great.
It is. And like one day I walked by a plant that had a caterpillar on it. It was a milkweed and it had a caterpillar eating it and it wasn't sick. And I thought only the monarch needed the milkweed and that's all the monarch eats. This little caterpillar was a moth and it was a cycnia moth and it was rare. And the reason it was rare is because the milkweed so spread far apart, the little moth couldn't make it from one colony to the other to travel and have more moths, right? So it, in the long run, I entered it in iNature, and they posted it for our location as being where it was seen. But if I didn't take that caterpillar home and research it, I never would have had that opportunity.
You know, I've always noticed you have a love of nature, but you also are very fact-based. You're a person that studied nature and really know a lot about it, right?
Yeah,
it's not just a passion and a glance of the eye in a photograph.
No, the more I read, the more I want to know, right? The more I read, the more I want to see it, do it. So the caterpillar, the way they go into a chrysalis and what happens, the cremaster, all the little steps that it takes, I want to see that. So when I read about it, I see it because I watch for it.
I see.
So it's kind of a constant poke my nose in because I want it on a film. I want it on a picture.
Yeah. I watch a lot of nature programs on a documentary and film, you know, National Geographic. And I always wonder how they poke their nose in. And that's just it. You're just in there poking your nose in and,
and
taking photographs. You're documenting this stuff. You're documenting phases of life, which is kind of amazing. You know,
it's a cycle. And it's amazing, too, all the cycles that we have. You know, we're a cycle, too. And we don't look at it that way. But we are, and the monarch and the milkweed is the one that started the whole thing with me and the cycle and wanting to tell a complete story. So it's a cycle. It's an ornament that has the milkweed silks in it and the seed, and it's the beginning of a cycle, and yet it's also the end of one, right? So which one is it?
That's so true, yeah.
So
and that's life. So you're really documenting life. in all the cycles. Mm-hmm. Years ago, somebody told me something that stuck with me as a great lesson. That's on a day-to-day basis, year-to-year basis. Look at your life as cycles. You can have 1 month of a cycle in which mm-hmm. you can sort of burst forth like spring, burn with a passion like summer, let things drop like fall, and then have a moment where you pull in and sort of hibernate, you know, on a weekly or daily basis, if you just allow yourself, as opposed to looking at life as linear, and I'm running from point A to point B.
Yeah.
And that's the great thing. You're running from point A to point B, but you're stopping at all the points in between A and B.
Right.
The subtleties, the nuances in there.
Right. And the reason that I do that is I'm not able to tell you about the migration because I'm not there to see it, right? I'm not in the path. But my problem was the caterpillars are the ones that do all the work. They really have a rough life, and I really wanted to portray the life of the caterpillar. So for me, I focused on everything the caterpillar did, all the molting, everything it's got to do to eat. It has to survive, right? Whereas the butterfly, when it emerges, it's basically done with all those hard chores because the caterpillar did it all. It has the cardinal light in it to protect it, the poison, and it can fly, and it doesn't have to eat. It just drinks and nectars a little bit. The only thing it has to do is reproduce.
That's amazing. There are layers upon layers, and you and I had talked before you came into the show about doing parts one and two, and we really are going to need a part two and maybe a part three to keep exploring this in depth, because it's not just that you're a photographer. You know, you're a botanist. You're a lover of nature. You're you're an educator in a way about nature.
You know?
Have you ever thought about doing books in which you combine your photographs and writing as an educational tool for kids?
I've written that. I've done books. I've had Apple is the one that printed them and published them.
Yeah.
But I didn't put them on the market except for where I sell. They're not like on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to use a different program for that, and I haven't figured out that part. Right. I'm still working on how to do all the other stuff.
You're still transforming just like these creatures that you study under the camera.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So and the reason I also learned all this stuff like this is I had a hard time coming up with things to entertain my mother at the end.
Mm.
Right. So I put these plants on my deck, and then that way they would grow in the pots, and my mother could just go outside on the deck and sit on her chair, and she could see all the caterpillars, the butterflies, the whole process.
Yeah.
So I had it in my lot next door in our field, and I have 153 plants there that I grew from seed. That's a lot of plants.
It is.
You know, I go out and check them every morning, and then I come in and I'm all crawly. I feel like they're all bugs crawling over me. So I made a comment one day that I go to bed at night and I use Vicks just to get it all over me to get all the bug bites taken care of for the night.
That's a lot of bug bites.
Yes.
You know, locals will know that you were a great caregiver to your mother, Renata, who was a beloved member of this community and a writer of a book that I found fascinating. And I think that listeners would like to know a little bit about that. Your background and how you were raised and where you came from and where you wound up is just talk about an incredible journey. Talk about going from, you know, caterpillar to moth to tell us about that. Where were you born and how did you find your way eventually to Cookeville, Tennessee?
Okay, well, I was born in Germany. I was born after the war in 1944. And my father was one of the scientists after the war that all these countries, or four countries after all these German scientists. And so my father was one of them, and he came over with Operation Paperclip.
When you say after them, what we're talking about is the fact that several countries after the war courted and sought out scientists to bring to their own countries. At the end of the war, there was the fear that one country in particular might, say, hog all the scientists or have all the scientists.
I think they all wanted their knowledge.
They wanted their knowledge, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Americans wanted us to come over, and the scientists were supposed to translate the work and then also teach them. But they ended up knowing so much that they were given jobs and stayed here. So a lot of them stayed here, and my father was one of them. So that's how we came over here. And my mom and my sister and I, we followed later. We came in 2 years later, and we were smuggled on a military hospital ship.
No kidding.
Yes, and giving you my view, right? My mom talked about her and being on the ship, and the German wives were here because the military married German girls and brought them over as their wives, and they were on one part of the ship. And then the scientists' wives were on the other part of the ship. And she was talking about the wives, but she never, ever talked about us. And I had horrible, horrible nightmares in that ship.
Oh, no.
I was so scared of that big old chimney with all their black smoke and curling, curling, thick black smoke and the deep horns. And I wake up with nightmares thinking they were dunking people in there and making chocolate people.
Sure. I mean, from a child's viewpoint, it's terrifying. You know, every child, so many children I know talk about the monster under the bed or the monster in the closet. And yours included these things that were in front of you that appeared like monsters. Mm-hmm. You know, how old were you?
I was four.
You were four?
I was four.
Wow.
And I was afraid of my own shadow.
Of course.
Anyway, I was scared half to death of water. And they say that children have post-traumatic stress syndrome too, right?
Yeah.
So light, fire, all that stuff just terrified me. So I was a real scaredy cat. But I made it through.
It's understandable that you were, as you say, a scaredy cat. It's that your father had also left a couple of years prior. You were just with your mom. So there's that thing that you weren't even aware of at age four that was there, the absence of a parental figure, you know, who just disappeared and went off to somewhere, and then you were to follow?
Yeah.
That would be very scary. Talk about a leap of faith for a child.
Yeah,
you know,
and then I didn't speak English. I didn't understand anybody, right? I was all German. Mom had some English, so she could kind of communicate, but I didn't understand. I had a sister that was 2 years younger than I was, too. So I couldn't imagine my mom making a trip like that with, you know, we packed diaper bags for babies, and I don't know what she could take and what she couldn't.
That's amazing.
Right. But then when we came here and when we docked, the people came to collect all of our toys because of the germs. We couldn't take them to the new country.
No. Mm-hmm. Come on.
So my mom threw our teddy bears overboard. And she thought that I was in bed taking a nap. She didn't know I was right behind her.
Wow. You know, your mom wrote a great book, but it seems to me like besides what you create as an artist, that you have another book. There is another book that could be possible if you were to write something like your mom wrote, your memoirs of how you came to this country to begin with. I get a little scared listening to it. You know, it's very anxiety provoking to think of all of that. Well, we'll listen to more of that when we come back. We're talking to Helga Skinner, who is a fascinating artist and a lover of nature, primarily a photographer, but there's so much more that we'll hear right after the break.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. Office Mart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service, too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. Office Mart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at Office Mart.
Welcome back to Local Matters. We are in the studio today. I'm Lewis Matheny, and I'm with Helga Skinner, who is not just an artist and a photographer, but a lover of nature and an educator about nature on many levels. And for me, it just started with seeing your photographs at your location in the historic West Side Shopping District. Tell listeners about your location and how they can come to find you.
Oh, okay. The location is 39 West Broad Street. I'm in an older building that has a front entrance and it has businesses on both sides. So when you come into the door, you go to number F1 or 1F. The F stands for fabulous, not flunking. And you can come and see me. I have a perfect sized little shop with big windows to the hallway so that you can see my artwork if you should walk by it later in the evenings when we're closed. And you're welcome to come in anytime and just make a mess. Put all the cards around, put your cards together. You can pick all kinds of cards and subjects. I have birds. I have insects. I have, right now I'm working on the Luna moth, and I've got the babies from the Luna moth. I don't have names for them yet. And they're getting ready to go into a cocoon, and I'm kind of anxious. It's something new for me. So I'm taking good care of them, hoping to get more Luna moths in the end.
When you talk about cards, you're talking about a resurgence in culture in general in which people are interested in greeting cards again. You're right in there producing these great greeting cards. And I've understood you correct from before when we talked about this before we came on the air. You're telling stories with the cards, image by image, correct? One set provides a story.
Yes. I have boxes of cards, and they're boxes of six, and they're a cycle or they're a story, like the plant from the seed to when it goes to its demise. And I have little blurbs in there, little facts about everything. So I've got one that is the dragonfly, and I looked up things about it, and it has a nice fact sheet to go with it and six different poses of the dragonfly. And I think that that makes a very, very nice gift for people who are shut in, the people that are in nursing homes, because it gives them photos to look at, they can write cards too, and it gives them a little bit of history about what I've done. So all of my things have stories, and some of them have names.
Yeah. Well, we were talking in the first segment of this about the story of your life, and we barely touched on the fact that you went through this very traumatic experience just to get to the United States. This was all prior to the age of five. Mm-hmm. So up until 4 years old, there were so many things that happened to you that were traumatic that meant you evolved in the way that these animals and insects that you're photographing. I think in some ways you're looking at it that way, right? You're sort of telling a story about yourself.
Yeah, that might be that way. I mean, I look at animals and I don't feel sorry for them. All I can say is when I came to Tennessee, the nature that's all around here, the peaceful people, the town, it just brings out the love, right? It's a love and a curiosity. And so I stand up for the caterpillar because I think it's not getting any credit. That's my biggest problem was I wanted it to get credit, right?
Okay.
Or the underdog.
Yeah,
you always want to help
sure.
the underdog. And then my parents were really strict. I wasn't allowed to associate with people. You know, Germany is very class conscious. And so that affected me in high school and junior high school. And there were a lot of things where my parents wanted us to stand out a little bit and not allow us to do things. So I'm trying to make up for it here. I didn't wear blue jeans in my whole life till I came here.
No kidding. You know, it's funny that you say that. I didn't think about the fact that you came here with parents who were from a different part of the world, literally. So there was, mm-hmm. as you said, a different kind of culture there that was far
standard.
Stricter and classism and divisions between mm-hmm. types of people. And you know, just to be in the United States alone in, say, the 40s, 50s, 60s and growing up, you know, there was a version of a strict parent here in the U.S.
Yeah,
you had
yeah.
extra strict parents.
Yeah,
yeah,
I did. I
but
had
it made
to,
you who you are.
Yes. I had to answer the phone, Ritter's Residence, Helga speaking.
Ah.
So now for fun, when I answer my mom's phone, I answer it that way.
You do?
Yes.
That's great.
She got a kick out of it, really. And our friends do, too, because of you know, goes back to the back when.
Right, yeah. Well, you know, I think there is a version of sort of etiquette that's completely missing in society today. And I wouldn't want all the rules of etiquette to come back, but mm-hmm. there's some that I do miss.
Yeah.
You know, that keeps us from being complete slobs, I think,
yeah.
quite frankly.
Yeah.
But again, you're telling stories with these photographs and stories of your life are in there because I think on a lot of levels, every artist's work is a little bit autobiographical. Mm-hmm. But you're, like you said, you're not feeling necessarily sorry. You're just giving this insect or this tiny creature credit where credit is due.
Right. And I want it to look heavenly. I don't want something. I like abstracts. I'm totally into abstracts too. So when you come to my shop, my caterpillar might look a little bit different in another picture. You know, it's just because I like to move it around a little bit and tweak it. But I want softness around it. I don't want, here's a line, a real sharp line, black and white.
Right.
I don't want that real sharp border.
Yeah.
I want it to mellow and smooth and
yeah.
I want like something to float out that you see first and then everything else kind of have a soft blur to
okay,
it.
Okay, I know I'm reading too much into this, but once again, telling the story of your life, you grew up with borders and boundaries and you love the idea of
true.
Just getting rid of the borders and boundaries and flourishing and mm-hmm. all this sort of spilling outward, which is what you do
yeah.
you know, with your work.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah, you're calling it a shop. It's also sort of a gallery and it's one of those great galleries that you don't see that much anymore and it's kind of tucked away, which is wonderful in a way. You're back in this quiet spot down the hallway and that to me is the fun of it. You're not
right.
just right on Main Street next door to this and next door to that. And, you know,
right.
it's not just a distraction.
Yeah.
You know, for people to walk down the hall and step into there means they're sort of letting go with their crazy
yeah.
days and
yeah.
just taking an exhale and looking at this work. We're talking about the work of Helga Skinner, who's an amazing artist, and she works with nature and photographs. You mentioned earlier that you're a part of a camera club, right? Or a photography
yes.
club?
Yes. The Cookville Camera Club is the name of it.
Okay.
And we've had an average of 35 members. We were at one point a little bit larger because we were also doing classes and we're very active in that. But I am a member. I'm a past president. And now I just took care of mom. I didn't, the last couple of years,
yeah,
I haven't
yeah.
done anything major because I wanted to be with her.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So we have the meetings now from Cookville Camera Club. They're now at my house.
Oh, okay.
Because we have no place to go, right? Yeah. Everything. And I have a garage with two doors, so they can sit there and have doors open and the breeze go through.
Lots of the safe distancing while you're a club together. So that's great to be able to do that.
You know? That kind of helps keep in touch with everything. And they're the ones that, you know, they've picked up things from me, too, because I do what I do. Yeah. With all my animals.
You definitely do what you do, which is unique.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also great to be a part of a club because you can each work together and yet contrast each other in your own work. And there's a vibrancy in that. I think if you're just working alone all the time, and many of the great artists throughout history, painters, photographers, writers, get together because there's a sort of communal energy that happens that gets you more creative. What sort of camera do you work with? Did you work in 35 millimeter film at all, or have you always worked in digital?
No, I've always had little Brownie cameras, you know, that was all I ever had.
Oh.
I've never worked in a real camera and film and an expensive camera. I was never really into that with all the things I was doing.
Right.
So when I retired, I bought the digital camera. So I had to learn the camera as well as the computer.
Sure.
Because it has a computer program to do the film, you know, so with digital film.
How many years ago was that?
5 years ago.
You have really learned fast then because
I
what
did.
You're
I
producing.
I took all kinds of classes. Yeah. I had somebody that kind of supervised me. There was a gentleman, Bill Miller, that was the president at the time, and he really helped me a lot with it too. And then I'm the one that did the music. So I'm also in the symphony on the board.
I see.
And I'd like to have everybody combine the arts. Right? I need the music for the slideshows.
Sure.
And so we're all kind of in together.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about doing a slideshow of your images using a live orchestra?
Yes, that's why I like the symphony. But I have to figure out how to do that, right?
Yeah.
I'm new. I'm the newbie on the block, so I don't better not get in there and say too much right away. But yeah, that way you can see the image and feel it.
Yeah. That's a wonderful feeling that you're conveying in discussing that. You know, you've incorporated nature so much into your art, and you also work with nature. You actually make creations that are nature-based. Mm-hmm. And I've heard you talk about milkweed before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, I love the milkweed pods. That's what started the whole milkweed monarch thing. The pod has a beautiful, silky substance with a seed at the end of it, you know, and it's beautiful. The seed, the brown seed, is used for face oils and hand creams and body oils, and it's also used to make pesticides. And the silks, they used a long, long time ago in baby comforters and baby cribbing to keep the babies warm because it's more insulation, they found, than the feathers. And I make Christmas ornaments out of it. There's a static that goes with it, so it just fluffs up. I make things to put on your tables, bottles with ribbons around the neck with corks in the top, and then this fluff that's inside. And very few of them because it spreads better if there's not that much in it, right? It's just really decor, home decor.
Well, and you know what's interesting is I looked at some of the work that you have in the window, and then I looked at what you have in the studio or the store in the back, and I said, in a way, again, you're talking about sort of an unsung something that you're singing the praises for. And in a way, you're giving a coronation or a crown to this. You know, you take this beautiful stuff and you give it a place on a throne in this bottle, you know, well-preserved. And it's really beautiful. It's kind of breathtaking, quite frankly, in that situation or in that setting rather than just out in nature. In nature, it's also a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
But the fact that you take the time to give it this amount of respect, I don't know how you get the stuff in the bottle. It's the same as the ships that I see people put in.
Oh, well,
in the
you
bottle.
Know what?
Intricate.
I open up the pod and then I just take a pinch of the seeds out because there's like 300 seeds packed in this pod. And so once one comes out, they all pop out, right?
I see.
It makes a big bush. So I just stuff them in there, but I put my little finger in afterwards or a pencil to push them all the way in.
I see. You know, you said something once before the show, you and I were talking about, and a phrase that I think you'll be remembered for is I make buttons look beautiful. What was the phrase?
Buttonholes.
Buttonholes
look beautiful.
You make buttonholes. Okay, that's amazing to take.
I look at everything. I mean, I can do anything. I take a plastic cup. I have a beautiful background for a plastic cup. Just because of the angle I took it and the pattern it makes by itself. And I like pattern, but I don't like a lot of color and pattern. You have it so busy that you don't see anything, right? So I twist it, and I do that with my milkweed. I can twist it. I can pinch a little bit on some of the flowers, and it gives them some motion. It makes them look like they're moving. Right.
You know, the second part of that sentence I heard you say, besides I make buttonholes look beautiful, is, and I don't stop. And that's something about you're continually evolving and creating. And I'd love to hear more about that. And this is part one of two with Helga Skinner in the studio for Local Matters. And you'll come back for another session so we can hear more about this, right?
I'd love to.
In the meantime, people can find you at helgasphotos.com, HelgasPhotos.com. For a look at that, or at your space at 39 West Broad Street in Cookeville.
My images and more.
Great.
By Helga.
See you again soon. Thanks.